This programme was first broadcast on ORFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to Bringing Wellbeing to Life, the programme that takes wellbeing research off the page and into our lives. I'm Dr. Denise Quinlan, and today we're talking about restorative practices and how they can contribute to school wellbeing. My guest today is Greg Jansen of Restorative Schools. Together with Rich Matla, they have worked with schools throughout Australasia for the past decade, teaching and embedding restorative practices. Their work includes work with schools in Malaysia and Singapore, and more recently, Cambodia. Greg has also been involved with change leadership and cultural development work with schools throughout New Zealand for the past decade. Kia ora, Greg. We're delighted to have you with us. Welcome to Bringing Wellbeing to Life.
Kia ora, Denise.
We know that you've worked in restorative practice for a long time now. To start us off, can you briefly tell us what restorative practice is, and then let's get into talking about the principles of it?
Yeah, thanks, Denise. A statement a colleague once said, they says, restorative practices is not simply a system, but a way of being. And I suppose the way we look at that is not only being, but how do we be well within that space? And the fact that it's not about a doing, it's not a way we do things, but it's a way we be in the things we do. So, you know, corny, but we try to be before we can do. So we have to be well before we can do well within those spaces. So for us, the link between using a restorative or relational approach and wellbeing on whole order is integrally linked. In fact, we don't believe you can have one without the other to authentically live out either of those aspects.
If I was a school teacher and I wanted to bring restorative practice in, what kind of things would you tell the staff room we were going to be looking at?
I suppose that looking from what is restorative, first of all, it's not simply a conversation or a chat or a conference, but bigger than that, in the sense that it's about we sort of liken it to the idea of how it's all about relationships or the learning culture, and then the quality of the culture that we have within our communities, and whether that's staff, whether it's staff students, student whānau, staff whānau, the wider community, and how within a school context we build those communities, how we grow those communities, those strong learning communities, and acknowledging that once you grow it, you also have to maintain those communities. And so the challenge of not only building relationship and connection, but in maintaining a connection, but recognising that wherever there's people, we will at some point frustrate each other, disconnect or stretch or strain or get you're frustrated with each other in that space. It may break in a small level or quite massively. And so the challenge is, how do we then not punish through that place, but actually learn through that place and reconnect? And I suppose with the reconnection, once you reconnect, doesn't actually solve everything. You need to then look at what do we need to do to sustain that relationship afterwards or that learning culture afterwards. Mm-hmm. So it's the simplicity of, I suppose, how do you build, maintain, restore and sustain a learning culture within our communities that we're operating in.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is, for you, restorative practice is, it's bigger than an approach to discipline, that it's really a relational approach around that's centered on how do we build community and sustain community through the normal range of upsets that human beings have when they live and work together. Okay. And talk to me about why that's important and what some of the key principles of restorative practice are.
I suppose within a school context, it's key in the sense that if you look at any large international educational research, it all talks about one of the highest success factors for young people achieving is the quality of relationship that the teacher or the adult has with the learner. And so we recognise that you don't have to look too far in educational research to realise that that quality of that relationship is a massive impact. And recognising that in schools, we haven't always done that relationship well. And the key is, how do we do those relationships better? To support our young people to grow and to actually achieve better. So it's not simply an ability to build better relationship, but actually through that connection to build better engagement, and through that engagement to build better achievement. So it's actually not just about feeling good, but but it's actually achieving well as well, and then the link to achievement and growth within those spaces. I suppose the comment around what are some of the principles you said, some of the work at Glasser in the back in the 60s and 70s around the social control window or social discipline window, as we call it now, around the ability to look at if you have two axes of an X and a Y axis, of the vertical axis being structures and boundaries or rules, and the horizontal axis being support and care, and recognising that if I'm all about structure and low on support, it's often very my way or the highway. When things are done to you, or a place of punition. The bottom right axis, or when you've got lots of support and low structure, so highly supportive and lots of care but not a lot of boundaries, it's often can come off as quite permissive or excusing, or with a technical term we put in there is sometimes wishy-washy.
And I like that as a technical term.
Highly technical term, that one, wishy-washy. If you look at the research with it behind that. And the fact that when you have low structure and low support, it's often quite neglectful and a scary space and a lazy space to be. And so what we look at is how do we have structure, boundaries, expectation, but also marry that up with support, care and concern. Mm-hmm. And that's what Glasser talks about is the relational or restorative approach. And when the terms when things are done with you. And I suppose that the whole challenge around looking at the ability to make shift and change when people do things with you rather than to you or for you within that space. So that's one key principle. The other one, I suppose, is in the sense of when you do it with one another, when there is disconnect, rather than looking at a breakdown in relationship as being what rules have been broken, who's to blame and what the punishment's going to be, looking at more in the fact of an opportunity to have stories being heard, where voices can be acknowledged and mana can be listened to, where we can explore the impact of the harm that has been done, but then also then, given that harm, what is then needed to start to put things right? What are the needs or accountability or that is needed? And then how do we move forward from there? And that comes from some of Howard Zaire's work many years ago, just around that difference between traditional responses versus more restorative responses within those spaces. So there are two key sort of principles that we rest on in this work.
And it's actually quite radical, isn't it? In that I was looking at some of your work and you quote Zaire around principles of restorative justice. This idea that, first of all, the misconduct is a violation of people and relationships. Mm. And second, that it creates obligations and liabilities. And third, that it's around how do we heal and put things right. And nowhere in there is punishment mentioned. Mm.
Yep.
And so often we don't, our discipline systems, broadly speaking, not just in education, have really focused exclusively on who was to blame and how should they be punished, rather than how do we move forward.
If we see things purely as a discipline system, we look to discipline.
Yeah.
If we see things as a behavioral management system, we look to manage behavior. But if we see things as relationships and we see the way we're made up within communities as a series of relationships, the challenge then is when the relationships either get broken, what are the obligations and needs that need to be met to repair those relationships? Not purely managing the behaviour or disciplining people to learn, but actually the whole fundamental shift to go, if the relationship is key, what there are the responsibilities and liabilities within one another to be able to put things right within those spaces. And so when we look at schools that have discipline systems and behavioural management systems, and I've been involved in schools like that for many years, but actually tuning that to come fundamentally, it's about the relationships we have across our communities. If we want a school that is flourishing and living well, or where we have a high state of haora, you know, we have to acknowledge the, you know, think about Drury's work around Te Wharetapu Whā, we need to acknowledge the multidimensional aspects of haora, those four dimensions of spiritual, whānau, mental or emotional and
physical
aspect of well-being in those spaces.
I love the shift. It's a shift from so what went wrong and how do we punish, which is all in the past, to how do we restore and how do we move forward? How do we get through this so that we can move forward with our relationships intact? It's a much more, as well as being a relational focus, it's a much more future focus, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely sits in that future focus space and relational space. but it also doesn't get, it doesn't put away or do away with whether there needs to be things to be done to put things right, you know, and consequences and outcomes can still certainly be part of a process, you know. Yeah. There are, is natural justice, there is an opportunity to, sometimes we have to do things to put things right. We have to repair the harm, and that may be facing up to what we've done or, and fixing up what we've impacted.
I'm hearing Nathan Wallace in my head saying some time ago when I heard him speak, saying one of the challenges we have in New Zealand is that we're not good at self-regulation. We're very good at external regulation. I will punish you. I will tell you what to do. And he was pointing out that if we always externally control people, we never give them a chance to learn how to manage themselves and self-regulate. And it sounds to me like the restorative process, by taking people through what was the impact, how were those people affected, what needs to happen, is really, like, you know, as you've said, there's so much learning for the person involved going through it about the impact they've had and what they need to do to restore that. That's very powerful growth and learning, as opposed to just plain old vanilla punishment.
Oh, absolutely. And I think if you think about the New Zealand curriculum from an educational point of view, we often get stuck in the back eight pages of the curriculum. You know, we look at the levels and the learning areas. And I think if we look at the front eight pages of the New Zealand curriculum, you know, the learning attributes and the ability to think and understand for ourselves, and as Nathan's saying there, the self-regulation, yeah. You know, if I'm always regulating on your behalf, when do I ever learn to regulate? Yeah. You know, and the key competencies are a classic aspect of that, you know. The five key competencies in the New Zealand curriculum are thinking, relating to others, using language, text and symbols, managing self, contributing and participating.
Brilliant.
And we would say that a restorative process where people that have caused an impact or broken connection or relationship are utilising at least four, if not four and a half, of those key competencies by going through a process. So when someone says a restorative process does not connect to the New Zealand curriculum, I would challenge that by saying it's fundamental in the front part of the New Zealand curriculum. Okay. To say, if we want to live well in community, we need to be able to think for ourselves, we need to relate to others, we need to be able to use our language, whatever language that may be, to own things, put things right. We need to manage ourselves within space, and when there is violation, look at what needs to be done to put things right and own that. And finally, we need to make sure we're participatory in those places rather than passengers, because I think too often in our education system, young people have been passengers in their learning, not participants. And yeah. It's always a challenge I ask people, you know, whether in a discussion, and even with my kids at home, are my kids participants when there's been things go wrong, or are they passengers? And it's very easy, having done this work for 20 years, to still treat my children as passengers, not participants. When I'm in a restorative or relational approach, I'm in a space of asking rather than telling.
Yes.
When I'm in a place of punition or punitive approach, I'm far more in a space of telling, or on a bad day, yelling. You know, when I'm in a permissive space, I'm often in a place where I will do things for someone, or I'll give them all the answers. So our challenge for ourselves, our challenge for people, staff we work with, and parents, and the challenge for myself as a parent, is to go, how do I tell less, yell even less, how do I answer less and ask more?
What have you seen working best in schools? And tell us about the best examples you've seen of schools that are doing this work well.
I think best is when, I had a colleague share with me, there's no such thing as best practice. I think his challenge was, it's about best practices. And I think the key is around when a school goes, who are we as a community? What is the core fundamentals of us as a community, and how do we actually grow community in all aspects of our learning communities? And so recognising that actually when we make shifts, it doesn't just shift one thing. We are in a system. We're not in isolation. It has an impact across the community. And I think that the examples where things have operated as of the highest level or highest form has been schools and communities have taken a holistic view across a whole school approach. to how do we look at this at a staff, board, trustee level, community level, staff room level, classroom level, community level, you know, individual level. And so, and I think that impact that going, that a cultural shift or a cultural change, no matter what it is going to take time. And it's going to have ups and downs, and we'll have implementation dips, and we've got to be ready for that, and got to be aware that we've got to be quite strategic and quite deliberate, and actually get people on board and go, this is the long term, not just a quick fix. This is about changing a culture, shifting a culture, rather than just putting band-aids on aspects with that we may see come up.
And if I asked you, which is a terrible question, to put a number on it, where you've seen schools saying, yep, we really want to do this. We get the importance of relationship and community, and we want to really make this change. How many years to do this work?
Well, pretty much most people within the change process would say that it takes between 3 to 5 years to make really true sustainable change. Mm-hmm. And if you think about a secondary school, you know, 5 years from year 9 to year 13, a primary school from year 1 to 6, a full primary from 1 to 8, you know, it's pretty much a cohort going through. Are we shifting a culture, or are we just following a person? And I think it's restorative is not about a person. Restorative is about a culture change across a community. And that culture change is relying on a group of the whole community, which is staff within a school, staff, boards, trustees, whānau, young people, right across.
And for schools that are embracing this work and are looking to do culture change, what are some of the benefits that they're seeing?
Talking to a school recently, one of the benefits they have seen is actually our young people are becoming, their words, almost too honest, you know, when they would, because of the culture of the way they do things, they go, hang on, I've impacted this, I need to go fix this up. Where students are starting to own their behaviour themselves and coming to go, this is, doesn't feel right, I need to support this to move forward. On a tangible level, seeing achievement results grow and change, you know. Another school talked about the fact of the culture, the calmer climate or the calmer culture. I was talking to a colleague recently who had been in a school for many years. She left for a couple of years and came back, and she says, what's going on in the school? It feels a different place that I've come back to.
So if a school wanted to introduce restorative practices, where would you advise them to start? And what would you, like, you know, what would you say you wanted to see them trying to do, say, within the first year?
If a school wanted to introduce restorative, I'd firstly like them to explore why they want to do restorative. What do they understand restorative to be? Is it just that it's a new fad and they want to join the craze? Or is it actually because they understand the impact of relationships across their community and have a really desire to go, we want to build strong, well-rounded relationships across our community, you know? And so first thing would be, why do it, you know? And the importance that it's got to connect to who are they as a school community, what are those things that they hold to? And coming back to Simon Sinek's work or Julie Atkins' work, what is that core why? And then from that why, going, how do we do relationship? How do we do learning? And then what does it look like? Because restorative is not a what, although it can be, and it's not a how, although it can be, but it is connected to the why. And if we don't connect it to the why, it'll just be another lovely initiative we've done for a year or 2 years, and then it falls off. Mm-hmm. And I think New Zealand schools have been guilty over years to at times have lots of new initiatives and just be getting through one initiative and jump to a new one. And the importance to actually go, what does this mean to actually shift a culture? And if we want to shift a culture, who are the people that need to be there? And there is clearly some people that we do need to be on the understanding, and whether that's a principal, as Fullan says, the principles of the gatekeepers of change, you know, what's the principal's understanding or the desire to build strong relational communities? And that means across a senior leadership team, that means across a staff team, that means across a school team, across a class team. And getting principals on board. And then I suppose it's a case of going, where are the areas where we do things well? You know, what is the aspects that we're doing well within the community? New Zealanders' schools are made up of fantastic, passionate people doing some amazingly passionate, awesome work. and going, where are the bits of gold that we can almost the positive deviancy, the positive aspects we can escalate and percolate, as opposed to thinking we've got to change everything. And because I don't think any school in New Zealand, no matter who you are, isn't doing some aspects of relational practice well. Every school I've seen, well, I've walked into, has got aspects, and sometimes you've got to prune some parts of the branches off and grow some others. But it's probably about looking critically around going, what are those things that we do well, and being able to be reflective enough and self-aware enough to go, does what we're doing build what we're saying?
We know this is a long-term process, and we can expect to spend several years, a whole cohort of students going through a school. And inevitably, as you have already mentioned, at some point, interest will flag, things will go wrong, people will get tired. What kind of strategies have you seen be most helpful to schools to help people keep going and persevere through those periods?
When it's reliant upon our person, we're often changing, we're just following a person. But when we're shifting a culture, it takes a group of people to shift a culture. And I think that by having a group, you get some solidarity, you get some support. When someone's flagging, you know, others lift their arms up. You know, often there's a statement that says, kings don't fight alone, which allows the whole idea is that you actually have to have each other to support one another to be able to make a shift. And I think that's a key thing around sustainability is actually that it's not done by one a lone ranger, but it's actually a coalition of the willing where we can support tautoko ngāwhi one another within those spaces.
What's one thing that you would like to see parents and teachers doing that you believe would make the biggest difference to young people's resilience and well-being?
We often get the response from parents is that we know what schools are like because we went to school, you know, and it almost that thing at times as teachers or parents, we can be experts because we were at school once, so we know how they work. And I think whilst we can be experts because we've been at school, we could also be learners because we've been at school. And I think that's the biggest challenge is that the whole thing, the ako, akonga, you know, the opportunity for reciprocal learning within what we do. And so I think our young people these days, you know, my children these days are growing up in a very different age that I grew up in. And schools are different places and the challenges they face are different aspects. And I think the challenges we need to continue as adults, as young people, as teachers, as parents, we need to continue to be learners rather than trying to be experts.
I love this. I'm taking away from myself as a parent the questions of how can I make sure that my children are participants and not passengers, and that I'm looking to be a learner in the way that I'm engaging in the situations I'm in with them. If you could only do one thing for the rest of your life to support well-being, what would it be?
I think it comes back to owning myself. And I think the reality is if each of us owned ourselves and could actually take responsibility for ourselves and our own relationships, the world would be a better place. And not trying to control everybody else, but actually know who we are, ko waio, who am I, and who are we, I think we would be more well as people.
That's lovely. Thank you.
No worries. And
lastly, what's your personal go-to strategy for boosting your own well-being when you feel frustrated or down?
Personally for me, probably exercise is a key thing, being out and about, but also being in nature, being in creation, being in the majesty of the majesticness of the creation, whether that's in the water, whether it's in the mountains, whether it's biking, and whānau, and connected to whānau. Is probably those keys. So put me in any of those. Put me in the, you know, do an adventure in the outdoors.
Your family.
With the family, that's better than anything, you know, and that fills up the well-being tank for a long time, that one.
Oh, that's lovely. Places. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. Greg, it's been a delight talking to you.
No worries.
A lot of valuable stuff that I know anyone listening will be taking away into their own family lives as well as into their professional lives. So thank you.
Thanks very much, Denise.
You've been listening to Bringing Wellbeing to Life on ORFM Dunedin. If you'd like to learn more, our book, The Educator's Guide to Whole School Wellbeing, is available from nziwr.co.nz from early 2020. You can also listen to a podcast of this show on oar.org.nz, on nziwr.co.nz, and you can also subscribe to Apple Podcasts. I'm Dr. Denise Quinlan. Thank you for listening. This program has been brought to you by the New Zealand Institute of Wellbeing and Resilience. For more information on how schools, communities and workplaces can grow their wellbeing and resilience, go to nziwr.co.nz.
This program was first broadcast on ORFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.